Today's December 15th, 2023. Current Bitcoin price is $42,123.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, survived the week.
You know, watching Ethereum go up, seeing if I want to convert that to Bitcoin. You know, decisions.
I think this is my personal opinion. I think you are safe to keep some, like, if you've got the Ethereum handy, I would hold on to that. Because I do think percentage-wise, Ethereum will outperform Bitcoin this cycle. I mean, I don't think
it did last cycle.
What's that?
It did percentage-wise.
Yeah, and it will, and I'm pretty sure it will again. And now, I mean, and watch, now I'm going to be completely wrong because Bitcoin, if all this stuff with the ETF and everything else goes through, like, Bitcoin's just going to rip. But,
well, that's what I'm hoping for.
I am too. I mean, yeah, so just to kind of get it out of the way so we don't forget later on, we did do the $3,000 investment number that we're kind of playing with. And obviously we did lose some because I think, was that Monday when we kind of tanked?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy how far it went down.
Yeah, we had a pullback in Bitcoin. So whereas in the last episode that we recorded, which was on December 6th, the $3,000 investment would have been worth $3,889.84. As of today, it would be worth $3,726.38. So we've almost recovered to where we were, but not quite there. It's Bitcoin is in a decisive area right now. Like, it's trying to decide where it's going to go. And of course, we've got the week's closing. You know, our high, I think, is still like in the 44. Did we hit 44.7?
Second. Yeah, higher high. I know it was over 44, but it's like it's... 45 seems to be a good resistance point.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you look at the chart from back in 2021, when it started going down, 2021, 2022, when it hit 69, it was started trailing down. 48 was actually a really important number. When it crossed that floor, it just fell.
Yeah, when it just sank like a stone.
Yeah, 48 was that resistance point. Once it crossed below 48, it just crashed.
Yep.
So those are a couple of interesting numbers psychologically with the market that seem to be kind of like the barrier right now. So we'll kind of pay attention to that.
Yeah. And I mean, and I'm curious too, like, I mean, because when we think about that, right, the first time in the last cycle, when we got up to 65,000 right in that range, and then we tanked back down, like when we had the big drawdown, you know, we went back down to that like 34, we went in as low as $30,000, right? And then we started to come back up and rally back up to 50,000 around August of 21, pulled back to that, you know, $39,000-$40,000 range, which is what you're talking about there, right? And then we did the, we went back up again and hit up to the 69,000 range. So
in November.
Yeah. In November of 21. And then we tanked. And then when it came down, like it did, it touched off that 40, you know, that $41,000 mark, and it started to kind of bounce. And then it rode around. So it looks like there's a lot of support within that 35 all the way up to about $47,000-$48,000 range. Like, cause we bounced around in there for quite an extended period. And then it wasn't until the SBF fiasco that it really kind of plunged that back down to that, you know, $15,000 mark that we kind of got back down to. So yeah, there's a lot of resistance, but this is kind of like the last major resistance area before we get back into the $69,000 range again.
Yeah. Before it basically boards the rocket to the moon, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you nailed it on the head. And I mean, there's a lot of weird speculation stuff going on. We did have, CPI numbers that came out, and I think there was part of that, I think, going into Monday was everybody was kind of waiting to see You know, are they going to be risk averse as we go into, you know, the end of the year? What was the Fed going to do? Were they going to say that the market's too hot? Because I think the jobs report came out, and the jobs report was talking about how I think 150,000 jobs were added, and but they weren't really good jobs, right? And that we've seen that consistently every time that there's a jobs report that comes out.
Yep. It seems like the jobs reports, I mean, all the jobs that are added are like the second jobs that normal people have to take just to keep food in the fridge, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it is hospitality, stuff like that. So it's, I mean, you know, we've talked about that before too, where, you know, the Fed wants to see that pain, at least some measure of that pain in the market.
Right.
And so, you know, we still haven't seen it with housing. We know, I mean, it's starting to kind of happen, but at the same time, from what I understand, the supply is still so low. That's what's keeping that kind of whole thing afloat. And, you know, but it makes sense at the same time that if you have some of these institutions that have a bunch of money, why not buy the real estate up?
Yeah.
As they come out on the market.
I mean, BlackRock's been buying all the real estate recently, and they're going to be buying all the Bitcoin here soon. So,
yeah. Yeah. So Fed minutes, or not the Fed minutes, but the CPI numbers came out at 3.1% at the annual, at the annual rate for November is what they were saying. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, the core CPI increase of 0.3% on the month and 4% from a year ago. So, I mean, again, we got to think about that. What was the CPI numbers back in November 22? It was like 7 or 8%, right?
Yeah, it was up there.
I mean, I guess we got it on the chart here.
Well, I was going to say it peaked somewhere in like May 2022.
Yeah. If you look at the chart that I got up in the Discord, it looks like right around October, we were still looking at around probably 7% is what I'm seeing there, or close to 7%. So it's still 3% higher than that right now.
Yep.
So yeah, anyways, a 2.3% decrease in energy prices helped keep the inflation in check as gasoline fell 6% and fuel oil was off 2.7%. And food prices continue to increase 0.2%. So, you know, Jerome Powell, like everybody is, we got the CPI numbers actually on Tuesday and then the Fed minutes on Wednesday. And Jerome Powell, like we had talked about this before too, because I think they had said before that they were still looking at possibly doing another interest rate hike before the end of the year. So this was our final Fed meeting before the end of the year, and they decided to pause. And they actually kind of reversed course, basically on some of his comments, saying, you know, coming in what they call dovish, right, where he's going to be softer on it, saying that right now it's looking like they're going to continue to hold off, which is this is the third meeting in a row that they've held off. What's your take on that? Like, why do you think they're going to be holding off right now?
Well, I think they're going to pat themselves on the back for quote unquote mission accomplished.
But he still hasn't hit his target of 2%.
Yeah, but I think here too much longer, things are going to squeal too loud. It's going into 2024, which is an election year. I mean, there's a whole lot of pressure on Powell. And something we also have to keep in mind is he was the Fed chair under Trump. And remember, he tried to start raising rates, and then Trump was attacking him on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he backed off. So I don't know if, you know, I'm pretty sure Biden is not attacking him on Twitter because, let's be honest, he's not actually running his Twitter account. But there's people behind the scenes that are saying, ease up, my friend.
Yeah.
This is pretty rough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, yeah. You bring up a good point. I mean, we're going into election cycle. They want to do as much as they can to make the economy look as rosy as it can be to keep basically Biden in power, right?
Yep. It's all about that incumbent, keeping the incumbent looking good, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I guess that's the big question now. If they get to do it the way that they want to do it, where they have Because I think Powell had basically said that he wants to see 3 rate reductions in 2024. If they get to do it that slow, like, oh yeah, we're going to, economy's doing so well, we're going to cut interest rates. We're going to cut interest rates. We're going to cut interest rates, you know? Or is it going to be one of those, oh my God, everything's going to shit. We're going to have to, you know, cut everything now and drop like massive amounts.
Well, I mean, you've been saying it for several episodes now. They take the stairs up and the elevator down. So if I had to guess, I'm assuming it's going to be an elevator down. But the thing is like the S&P 500 is basically at all-time highs right now.
Yeah.
Which just seems freaking bananas to me. But I mean, again, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. So I'm not surprised by this.
Yeah. Yeah. S&P, it's been on a tear. Like all of them. I mean, basically Jerome Powell is giving the market to go ahead to pump is what he's doing.
Yep.
By saying these dovish actions, those types of things, he's kind of giving everybody a green light, say, hey, money printers are about to come back on, my friends. Be ready for it.
Yep. Now, that's the thing. When people notice that the money printers have come back on, that's when Bitcoin's really going to skyrocket too.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of goes into the discussion that we had last episode and something we were kind of talking about a little bit before we kind of got going here. You know, what does that look like again? I mean, when we got money printers that come back online, we've got the halving coming up again. And then we may have an ETF in play. A spot
we
ETF.
We likely have an ETF in play, at least one.
Yeah.
And we know that one is BlackRock.
Right. And that's going to be, can you imagine the lawsuits? I would imagine people are going to sue if they don't get approvals.
Honestly, if Gensler was like roaming the streets and all of the crypto people saw him, it would not be a good day for him.
Well, and the crazy thing about Gensler, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast too, he taught a blockchain class at MIT where he covered Bitcoin and he loved it back then.
Well, when you become part of the political class, you got to kiss the ring before you start, you know, quote unquote, exercising your powers.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think you nailed it on the head. It's until he gets the political green light from Biden and or whoever is the cronies pulling the strings.
I mean, you gotta shake that lizard hand and bow down before them before you start, quote unquote, exercising your power.
You'd make David Icke proud with that.
Indeed, I'm wearing turquoise in his honor.
I know this isn't really actually, that doesn't tie directly into this, but like when you look at Elon Musk right now, the amount of scrutiny that he's coming under because Biden just does not like the man and he does not like Biden.
Well, you know, and it's kind of crazy. He's stepped on several landmines. I mean, talking trash about, you know, the ADL. Mm-hmm. He gave Alex Jones his account back on Twitter/X. I mean, it's going to be open season on all of Elon's companies here soon.
Yeah, but I think you've kind of seen a little bit of that. And there's been, you know, reports talking about how this is just unfair, like just a bias. It's political agendaing as opposed to actually having reasons to go after him.
Right.
It's all political, which is the wrong way to run a country and the wrong way to hurt somebody that's trying to stifle innovate, you know, or not try to stifle innovation in America by going after somebody like this.
Right. But that's kind of the reality of the America we live under.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. I mean, they hired how many? They more than doubled the IRS agents last year. And I'm just kind of curious to see how that plays out with crypto and people holding it in the tax situation. It's going to get messy as far as I can tell.
Well, and speaking of Elizabeth Warren, actually this week as well, and this all kind of coincided with the drop that we saw on Monday. She was bringing a bill to basically effectively ban unhosted wallets. So no more cold storage.
Yeah.
Although, I mean,
because crypto is used for money laundering and everything else, right?
Oh, that's what she's every single time. That's what she says. But on the same time, like the only thing that gives me any kind of like, okay, I don't care what she says. I mean, obviously I don't care what she says, but, is the fact that she doesn't have a very good track record in getting bills passed. So
thank God.
Yeah. I completely agree.
I'm not saying she is a lizard person, but she strikes me as one. So we'll move on from there.
Go on from there. Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, that's part of the, I think that was part of the reason why we saw the tank that we saw, early in the week. To be fair, it wasn't even that big of a tank for Bitcoin anyways.
For Bitcoin, I mean, it's moving a little bit more than usual.
Yeah.
I mean, at least this year. But, and that's the thing. She's talking about crypto being used for all these nefarious activities. And, I mean, let's not be dishonest. That's kind of how things ran, you know, a few years ago. Before, you know, on Silk Road and,
yeah,
dark web stuff. But that's not really what's happening today. But if you're looking at a lot of money laundering and all sorts of nefarious activities, just look at the dollar and different banks that are dealing with it right now. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, because if you want to launder with something, or if you want untraceable movements, you don't do it with Bitcoin. You do it with cash.
Exactly. Because Bitcoin, that's the beauty and the drawback of Bitcoin. Everything's on the ledger.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how to read it, everything's plainly shown.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think those blockchain analysis folks, I think that could be a really big future in this industry. Like, you know, as we move forward and Bitcoin becomes something that is kind of more held on to, it kind of becomes, you know, I honestly believe that it could be a base layer to the future economy.
Yep.
I mean, I think
almost look at like the world reserve currency.
Yeah. I think it could become, you know, that blockchain analytics, I think that could become a huge, huge industry in the future for people to take jobs in.
For sure.
We also had BlackRock and Fidelity and Franklin Templeton and Grayscale all meet again with the SEC just 2 days ago. And you know what's crazy is like the number of times I think... The first Bitcoin ETF was attempted to be introduced 10 years ago, over 10 years ago, by the Gemini twins, or the Winklevoss twins, that started up the Gemini exchange. And they got denied, and they had tried repeatedly over and over and over. What's crazy is that they are so silent. Like, you're not hearing anything from them during all this fiasco, you know, all this stuff with the ETFs. You know, I'm surprised they haven't tried to reapply again, but... I think the message has been sent loud and clear. The government's not going to approve anybody except for traditional finance in this space to take on that role.
Yep. Well, I'm not surprised by that. And just a little history on the Winklevoss twins. They claim to have invented Facebook. Zuckerberg just kind of stole it from him, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
And they were paid a handsome settlement, and they supposedly actually put all of that into Bitcoin at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. They're supposed to be sitting on one of the largest wallets out there of Bitcoin. So, I mean, for them, they may not care. They're like, whatever, we're going to get paid no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, if Bitcoin gets somebody's ETF going and it skyrockets to the moon, they're laughing to the bank or laughing to their wallets. I don't know. What's going to be the euphemism going forward when banks are obsolete?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. So I've got a question for you. Where do you think we're going to finish this week at? You think we're going to be up or down from here?
I've been looking at some of the charts recently, and this is kind of, historically speaking, in the cycle within... You know, the 4-year halving, there tends to be a downward trend this time before it starts going up. So it wouldn't surprise me if we go downwards, but I mean, just with everything that's happening, I still leave room for it to go up. I mean, so I'm kind of waffling here, but there's a possibility of going down, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to see what I don't know. Cause like typically like you can tell when Bitcoin really gets kind of range bound, it'll start to look like it's almost like a spring, right? Like it'll have like its movements will start to get really kind of slow and unvolatile, which is uncommon for Bitcoin. And that's when you're like, okay, well, it's going to make a major move. Is it going to be up or down? That's the question. But usually you can kind of tell just by some of the pressure that's going on or some of the sentiment that's happening. Right now, this chart is all over the place because it seems like we're kind of range bound right now within that 40,000 to, you know, $43,000, $44,000 range. So, because we've seen some major spikes, some major support, you know, off that like $40,000 to $41,000 range. So, I mean, again, like you said in the beginning, there's a lot of support in this area.
Right.
This is a major psychological level. So what's going to happen? We may come out with a big nothing burger and we're going to be still sitting at 42,000, or maybe we'll get a red wheat. Maybe we will drop a little bit lower because, you know, you're not going to get consecutive green candle weeks every week.
No. And we've had actually several green candle weeks in a row. So we're up, we're due for kind of a pullback here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of something we were talking about before. I mean, with this hypothetical purchasing of 3,000 Bitcoin, you know, the 0.0885. I mean, do you get cute and try and cash some of this out and then reinvest when the market dips? I mean, that's kind of the ballsy thing to do, but it's not necessarily the smart thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always the tough thing because right now, and that's where you have to go into that market sentiment, right? Like, because if you and I are thinking, well, we've had consecutive weeks of green, we're probably going to go down. Then you start to think, well, maybe the majority is thinking the same thing. You know, and then it's always going to do the inverse of what you wanted to do. And then it's like, but that's what the dude thinks we're going to do. So now we got to do the opposite of what the dude thinks we're going to do. It's like, oh man, I don't know. Like, I think I've told you before, I've tried to do that in the early days when I first started getting into Bitcoin. I would sell. And I would try and be like, okay, I'm going to wait and buy back in when it drops, you know, especially when it's really doing crazy volatility, like $1,000 in like just moments. I mean, which Bitcoin does, but, and I was giving myself an ulcer. I stopped. I was like, all right, just buy back in, you dumbass. Cause I even lost money.
Buy back in and just hold.
Yeah. Just hodl.
Well, absolutely. That's the thing. You know, I think the smart move, I mean, it could go down, but the smart move is if you're in it now, just hold your position. Eventually with the ETFs and everything, you're going to look like a genius. You try and sell out and then you miss this boat when it skyrockets, you're going to look like a freaking idiot.
Yeah. I think we've kind of talked about this before too, where this is probably the last time we're going to see some of these pricing in Bitcoin ever again.
No, I agree.
You know,
we're gonna look at, you know, you could have bought Bitcoin for under 40 is what we were saying mm-hmm. a few months ago. Now we're gonna be saying you could have bought Bitcoin for under 50.
Yeah,
and our minds are gonna be blown.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
at least people who are new to the crypto space, they're gonna look at that and go, "Oh my gosh."
Yeah, and I mean, they can look at it and feel that way, but it's like, you know what? When you're in the middle of it, it's not that easy. It feels like gut-wrenching a lot of times because you see these crazy swings. You're like, man, what's it doing? Where's it going?
And that's the thing. I've lived through a pretty bad crypto winter. You've lived through a couple. I mean, it's not exactly easy to go through.
No. No, and I think you probably have gone through what we've probably seen the worst crypto winter so far now, this one.
Yeah.
And I think every time we go through a winter from here on out, I have a feeling like they're going to subsequently become, maybe they won't, but if we do get them, if the 4-year cycle continues, I think they'll get harsher and harsher because you will see you know, we kind of talked about this last episode, you will see like a $250,000 Bitcoin. And if we go through another cycle like this again, that means we may see, we may very well see Bitcoin go from $250,000 to $69,000 if it repeats.
Right. Or even 65.
Yeah.
And then do something similar where it retraces it a little bit below the previous high.
Yeah. And that is completely possible. And that's when you look like an idiot by everybody else that are standing on the outside. You look like an idiot from everybody else standing on the outside that didn't want to buy at 50 or 40 or 30 or 20, right?
Right.
But meanwhile, you're still in profit because you bought in at 20, right? So right. Even if it is at 69,000, yeah, you didn't sell at 250, but guess what? You didn't sell at 250. You're still not going to sell at 69.
Well, maybe. Nice.
Nice. So yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's a different kind of market for sure. But eventually, when that volatility goes away, that's when Bitcoin's made it. It's done.
Indeed.
When it's sitting at, you know, $2 million per coin,
and more.
Yeah. And at that point, it's almost like you lend it out.
Yeah.
And draw some interest on that Bitcoin.
Yeah,
that'll be interesting days. That's actually what I'm hoping to do eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, where you don't even have to touch the principal at that point. Because you will be the market maker with that Bitcoin. But anyways, one other thing I did want to bring up, because I feel like we'd be remiss if we did not talk about this. It looks like there was a hack to the Ledger Connect kit.
Yes, I heard about this.
There's been some, and I think we did an episode about this whenever Ledger Recovery was being launched.
Right.
And then there was a big fiasco with that because they were talking about how, well, you know, you would essentially, like, part of your keys would be on this offline backup system, secured.
On different third parties.
Servers. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were gonna break up your coin. And or you're not your coin, your seed phrase basically. And some people would have some of your keys, some people would have other parts of your keys. They wouldn't all have the whole thing, but there was something about the extraction that people were kind of unsure of. And I get it for larger net worth individuals. I'm sure in some way they wanted some sort of insurance. You know, when you get, you know, say Michael Saylor, right? Do you think he would have all of his Bitcoin on just a single ledger?
No. I mean, whatever he gathers in the previous quarter is going to be on spread across multiple wallets, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he's probably got redundancies in place. And, you know, the kind of going back to the Winklevoss twins, we know that they do have like storehouses. From what I understand, they have like Bitcoin hardware, like, or it could be paper devices, especially with how early they bought in, but they're like scattered around the world. Like in hardened locations kind of thing. So, I mean, for somebody like if your Bitcoin becomes worth so much money, you're probably going to have more than just a ledger or a treasure. Like, I mean, I love the fact that we can self-custody our own coins, but I would want as much redundant security as possible at that point.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole, not all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean...
And let's go in a little bit in depth on this with... I mean, we are fans of Ledger and Trezor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the wallets that are connected online, though, that's where the malware has been put in place where people could potentially lose their crypto.
Yeah, it's whenever, so the way that this happens, just to make this clear for everybody, it's not necessarily when you're just storing your Bitcoin on your Ledger device or your Trezor device. It's whenever you're taking that device and using it to interact with a smart contract, basically within a DEX or like a dApp, a Web3 type application, where you're kind of opening that up to be able to transfer, like you're allowing the DEX to be able to transfer your crypto for you within the exchange while you're doing something. You're not simply just signing a transaction.
Right.
So I get it, right? Everybody wants to have all these cool extra features with their hardware devices, but it's like, and that's what drives me nuts. I just want a hardware device that's doesn't do anything other than hold on to my stuff for me.
Well, I mean, when eventually currency or crypto becomes currency, I mean, you will have some of it on a live wallet. Mm-hmm. That's also the riskiest spot. That's where people have lost it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, keeping it on the exchanges, that's could be even worse. I mean, because one thing about the exchanges is that the government could step in and take your crypto there, right?
Right. Or, you know, if you have it on some type of hot wallet where, you know, some worker at Ledger has put some type of malware in there to steal your crypto.
Yeah.
That's also an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the best way to go is. Like, I go back and forth. There's times I look at some of that stuff and I'm like, well, you know, open source is the way to go. Well, if you have open source, then the hackers can start rebuilding your codes from backwards, right? Closed source, well, then you got to trust the people that are creating the wallet. You know, I don't know what the best answer is.
I think the best answer is diversity.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I do agree. And I think we've kind of mentioned that before on this podcast.
Yep. And avoid voting. You know, I mean, we still haven't learned.
How many Bitcoin have we... 6 million Bitcoin lost in boating accidents, Rick.
I know it's not a whole lot, but it's all of mine. That's all I can say.
It's all mine too. It was a 2-for-1 deal. All right. Yeah. And so, I mean, for those of you out there that are interested in self-custody, we still do have the affiliate link for Ledger and the Elipal on our website. Just go to www.thebitbytepodcast.com. You can go under our links tab there and you can get yourself a hardware wallet. And basically, you're buying directly from the manufacturer. We are just affiliates. We do get a small kickback if you do decide to go that route, help support the channel. And we also have a newsletter that we're trying to get signed up for. So go ahead and give us your email on that, and we will. We're talking about doing some special episodes, I think, as well, where we're talking about going through, you know, what is it like? Like, if this is the first time you've kind of gone through a crypto bull market, or if this is going to be your first full bull cycle, you know, what do those feelings feel like? How do you navigate them?
And then how long does it last?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, when you're just like, you get that depressed feeling and you just got to understand, you know, it will recover. You know, and to have somebody sitting there with you that, yeah, it does hurt, but you know what? You'll be okay.
Eventually you're going to look good.
Yeah.
If you can just hold out.
Yeah. You got to hold out.
It's just when your greed gets ahead of you and you buy when the market peaks and then you start seeing it fall and then you're trying to unload.
Yeah.
That's when you get hurt.
Yep. Yeah. When I've made some ridiculously dumb mistakes in the crypto market, that have lost me quite a bit of money. And, yeah, I wish I could say I was a lot wiser from it, but you know, whatever.
I think you're wiser for it. And you know what? It was only fiat.
It's true. That is true. But, yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to bring up today?
I think that's it for today.
Cool. Well, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to y'all soon.
Bye.